Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're listening. Welcome back to AI and the Future of Work. Thanks again for making this one of the most downloaded podcasts about the future of work. If you enjoy what we do, please like, comment, and share in your favorite podcast app, and we'll keep sharing great conversations like the one we have today. I'm your host, Dan Turchin, advisor at Insight Finder, the system of intelligence for IT operations, and CEO of PeopleRain, the AI platform for IT and HR employee service. We learn from AI thought leaders weekly on this show, and the added bonus is you get one AI fun fact each week. Today's fun fact, there are now more than 150 companies focused on ethical AI, according to the Ethical AI Database Project. Ethics in AI, as you know, is a popular topic on this show. We've hosted great guests like Krishna Gade from Fiddler and Bindu Reddy from Abacus AI. This is the first time an independent group has defined AI ethics and actually started tracking the progress of ethics-focused companies. I hope the increased visibility of AI ethics leads to an industry-wide set of standards that govern how AI is deployed commercially. I anticipate a time soon, probably even in the next 12 months, when AI hygiene will be scored like, say, restaurant hygiene. Now, shifting to this week's conversation, call centers are notorious for having high turnover. Call center agents get frustrated doing mindless repetitive tasks all day, like resetting passwords or sharing the status of orders. They're super motivated by challenging work and they like to learn new skills. We often say anything that can be predicted is better left to machines, but anything that requires empathy or rational thinking is better left to humans. This applies particularly well to the customer service industry. Most tasks are mundane and rely on repeatable workflows. Automating those workflows is actually a really hard problem, and it's spawning whole industries. We finally have the AI and NLP technology to detect user intent and resolve their issues without human intervention. Well, today's guest had that vision back in 2019. Before founding Replicant, Gadi Shamia spent 5 years as the COO at customer service leader Talkdesk after having founded Magneto and leading EchoSign after its acquisition by Adobe. It's accurate to say few people on the planet understand how to apply AI to customer service better than Gadi. He and the team recently announced a $78 million Series B raise at a $550 million post-money acquisition from an extraordinary group of investors. It's clear this space is nascent, and Gadi and the team are on the way to achieving his ultimate vision. And without further ado, Gadi, it is my pleasure to welcome you to the podcast. Let's get started by having you share maybe a little bit more about your background.
Hey, glad to be here. Without boring anyone, I spent last 25 years in the tech world, mostly in startups. I made a choice to dedicate most of my career to startups. I parked for roughly 7 years in large companies, had a chance to start companies from scratch, and some of them succeeded, some of them failed, had the opportunity to grow as companies through IPO. So I had a pretty interesting journey that most was focused on startups. Because it's what I love. I love being in a small environment where you have a lot of impact, whether you're a founder or you're just one of the first employees and able to make a lot of impact. And as you said, I spent the last, now it's almost 8 years in the customer service space. I found the space fascinating, especially because that's one of the last places in the enterprise where you have hundreds and sometimes thousands of people do exactly the same type of job. And one of the last places in the enterprise where automation or actually improvements through technology are very minimal. And we still do many things in a similar way to the way we've done them 20 years ago. So fascinating space impacts every one of us in our days when we call customer service, and it impacts the agents that are on the other side. So that's who I am without boring you with my LinkedIn profile.
So as consumers, we often come to rue the day when we have to talk to a robot because we're afraid of how the experience might be. We don't want to be treated like robots. And yet you and I, being in the space, know that We're all about making humans better with technology and improving the customer experience. What's your argument to those who say, you know, robots can never improve the consumer support experience?
I think most people rule the day they have to call customer service, because the lack of predictability is the biggest issue here. Imagine you have to call customer service. You have half an hour in your day that you dedicate in between meetings, and you don't know if you're going to get an answer within 5 minutes, 50 minutes, or 5 hours. That's the range. It makes it this task when you say, I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm going to do it after work. By the time it's after work, it's closed because the working hours are, you know, up to 5 p.m. EST or whatever the working hours are. And the experience is so unpredictable. It doesn't allow you to really focus it and focus on it. And many people actually postpone it, don't get their issues done, give up on money, on refunds that they need to get just because it's so unpredictable. So the issue we're dealing with is that call centers are trying to solve a really complex problem. They need to have enough agents at any given moment to answer the call volumes that they're getting. But the problem is, one, they cannot predict the call volumes. If you're a roadside assistant company and all of a sudden there is a colder than expected day, how would you manifest another 100 agents to deal with the volume? The other problem they're facing is that people don't want to do this work anymore. So the agents on the other side are not really interested in getting minimum wage to sit and hear people screaming at them on the phone all day long. If you talk with people that used to be agents and maybe now they're driving an Uber or find any other entry-level job, they will tell you, I'm driving my car, listening to my favorite podcast or favorite music. Usually nobody screams at me. You know, once in a month I have like some kind of an incident and it's not a big deal. And I have much more freedom rather than sitting in a contact center and answering these mundane calls 8 hours a day. So we're not starting from this really perfect state where everybody gets this amazing white glove customer service. And now we're saying, oh, let's replace it with robot. We're starting with contact centers are unable to meet the demand they're getting. They're unable to kind of rise for the occasion, especially post-COVID, especially when there are fewer agents and call volumes are much less predictable and call spikes are much less predictable. So that's the starting point. Now, you're right that when 10 years ago, companies made an attempt to solve it through automation, and it was IVR, a very basic phoning-based technology. All the systems we're doing are acting like a speed bump in the way of the customer. In a way, it was this old technique of deflecting customer volume. It's telling you there's nothing to see here. Go look elsewhere. You can check our website. I know I can check your website. I already did. I couldn't solve my issue. You don't need to tell me to check the website again. So people were burned a little bit by the deflections that we're experiencing and by how lousy their systems were. But as you said at the beginning of the show, the technology allows us now to have really great conversations. Some of them could be 5 minutes long, 7 minutes long. Our record is about 70 minutes of a machine to human conversation that resolved 21 different issues. So we are in a place where we can do that. And then what we give back to the caller is this combination of being able to answer their call 24/7 in real time, understand what they call real quick, resolve most of their issues. But if we can't, we can transfer them to an agent with all the context that we already captured. And the agent that is now more available can pick up the conversation and deal with it much, much quickly or much quicker. So the experience overall is better. And we actually see better customer satisfaction scores for our customers across the board. So yes, some people dread it, but I would say we have customers callers from 80 years old. One of our customers serve exclusively the senior community. We have truck drivers that call us the platform. We have restaurant workers in fast food restaurants to exclusive restaurants. All of them are getting really comfortable with the system once they start resolving their issues.
What are the biggest technological or maybe even cultural barriers that we still need to overcome before we would agree that maybe the equation has been inverted, where most consumers would prefer to get automated support versus the traditional experience, like you described, of dealing with support agents that maybe, you know, deliver a suboptimal experience?
I think if I start with a cultural part, I think the cultural issue is actually more on the buyer, on the companies, the brands, and the customers. The callers tend to be very comfortable, and the majority of them actually interact with the thinking machines and get their issues resolved. There's much more concern on the customer side. We hear things like, but my customers are not going to interact with it, but I know my customers. We have a whole very different, unique customer base and things like that. So there's more conservatism by some, and obviously a lot of adoption by others. And I think it's just seeing more examples of how these machines are solving issues. This is number one. Number two, which still doesn't touch technology, is picking the right use cases and making sure we build trust with the between machines and the callers. We tend to be pretty selective. We have an opinion. We tell our customers, listen, I know this is what you want to automate, but this is not a great use case for a machine. That call flow requires a lot of empathy, or that call flow requires a lot of elasticity in different solutions. You actually want your most senior agents that has been here for 2-3 years to deal with it. You don't want a machine to automate it, because you're going to lose points. So when companies choose the wrong use cases or have really insufficient technology to solve the problem, then you get this bad customer experience, or in a way send us back a few months in perception. From a technological standpoint, you know, technology is still pretty new. Resolving full complex call, like a roadside assistant call where you're stuck in the middle of the road, was a science fiction five, seven years ago, or even 3 years ago. And now it's something we're doing, you know, every day, thousands and thousands of times, you know, around North America. But it's still early, and the technology still is rigid. It allows us to solve calls that have very clear conversion funnel, which the good thing is a majority of calls actually have very clear conversion funnel. You're stuck in the middle of the road. We know what we need from you in order to send you a tow truck. We know which question we need to ask. We know which safety checks we have to make. For example, do you have a pet or a kid locked in the vehicle? And we guide you through a process. At the end, you get a tow truck sent your way. That's a great call. It doesn't require a lot of flexibility, because it leads you from where you are to a tow truck coming your way. But of course, if you want to book a series of excursion in your next vacation in Hawaii, and the conversation is going to become more open-ended, and what about your kids and what are they like and so on, you will require someone to actually understand travel and have this mental agility to switch between different topics to resolve it. And technology is not there yet. It will be there. It's improving all the time. But again, lucky for us and all our customers, 60-70% of the calls are these ones that are more transactional and have a clear conversion path, which means that we can create immediate relief for companies and allow the agents to really focus on where they can make a difference, and not on, as you stated, reading back your order status or even deal with a roadside assistant call. You much rather get your call answered with zero wait and get a tow truck coming your way 4 minutes later than wait 15 minutes on hold, which is not even that bad. And then, you know, delay the whole thing in 15, 20 minutes.
So we're talking about automated decisions. We always have to think about the impact of a false positive, but also the impact of a false negative. And I love that example you just gave about roadside assistance. If you had asked me, independent of this discussion, is roadside assistance or those calls good candidates for autonomous deflection? I'd say no way, because the stakes are high. There could be lives at stake if you're stranded on the side of the road. How do you think about the way you just described it? It's a better experience because it's automated. But how do you think about what happens if something goes wrong and a bot makes a wrong decision and someone's life is potentially in jeopardy as a result?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we have a strong opinion about that. We do not want to deal with safety issues or even pain. So I'll give you a specific example. One of our customers is in the dental space, and they came to us after being a customer for a year and say, we want you to also handle calls where people complain about pain. And we said, no, remember we told you pain is a high stake, high emotion. We don't want to deal with it. And then the customer said, listen, what happened right now is that people have suffered from pain call, they wait anytime between 5 minutes and an hour on hold, get more aggravated, only to speak with an agent that can't really resolve their issue and send them to the medical team that can actually stop resolving their issue. So this customer experience is hold for some amount of time, get to an agent, explain their issue, and then just to be transferred to the medical team that sit there idle waiting for the call to happen. So if you automate this flow as well, we can get these people much quicker to the dental team. We've done that. And now we say, so how can we help you when you call this company? And we said, I really suffer. I couldn't sleep all night. I have this terrible pain. Sorry to hear that. Here's a dental team. So in 60 seconds, you talk with the right people who can help you rather than wait. And the robot does not try to tell you to take Motrin or do anything. We're just transferring you in this specific case. But by doing that, we're able to get these people with pain issues to someone much faster. In the case of roadside assistance, first question we ask when you describe your issue is, are you safe? But we're not even asking it we ask you a very specific question. If you're locked out of the vehicle, we ask you, do you have a pet or a kid locked in the vehicle? And we never forget to do that. Because you might say, oh, not a big deal. I have a pet locked in a vehicle. It's only 80 degrees outside, not knowing that every 10 minutes in a locked vehicle at 80 degrees, the temperature can increase by 15 to 20 degrees inside the vehicle, and your dog might suffer from this heat. So you may not even think about that, but we will ask, and we'll do it every time. We're not going to forget to ask you because we just got a text message from a boyfriend or a girlfriend. And I think there's power in that. As long as you refuse to take the use cases where really you want to rely on trained humans and pay a lot of attention to what customer says, you're unlikely to get into a risky situation. And add to it that we design our thinking machines to never lock people in what we call a botland. If you just say agent, we're going to send you to an agent. If you just say help, if you say any of these words that they indicate you want to speak with a human, even if we missed this question, whether there's a pet locked in the vehicle, just all you have to do is say agent. We'll say it to an agent. People always have this out. And so far, over more than 30 million calls, there was no case where we mishandled something in a way that got anyone even close to a harmful situation.
So, of course, that makes sense. And that's what I was hoping you would say. That, like you mentioned, you're making it easy to hand off to a live agent with context if the stakes are high. And you're basically automating the routine stuff that consumes time and is very accurate. But let's take the inverse. So presumably your customers like mine on the internal employee service side measure the impact of automation based on, at some level, call deflection, because that reduces their call volume and their cost per ticket. So take the other side of that now and say, if it's so easy to hand off to a live agent, how do you also optimize for when it's a true positive, when the bot gets it right, how do you optimize for fully automating the interaction when the bot's sufficient?
Yeah, so I'll give you some data on that. Only 5% of the callers ask for an agent. That's it. And we do a lot of work to make sure that we design a conversation in a way that we build trust with the caller, so they don't ask for an agent. And then it really depends on what the customer wants to do from their side. Some customers will, and of course, depending on the use case. When it comes to safety, it's enough to say agent once and you transfer to an agent. When you're about to just pay your bill or just update your address, if you say agent, we're actually going to say, sure, we can transfer to an agent. We'll share with you the wait time and help you make a decision. So we're not stopping you, but we'll say, I hear you want to speak with an agent. The current wait time is 19 minutes. Do you want to wait or try to resolve it? We can hold your place in queue. And most customers will actually say, I'll go give it a try. And in most cases, we're going to resolve it. And now we are we don't have to transfer them to an agent. So we do the slightly nudges when we don't think there's anything big at stake. We wouldn't nudge at all if we think there might be a safety issue. It's not even that sophisticated, honestly. We decide based on the use case whether we have any tolerance to keep people on the line with us for another 20 or 30 seconds. And sometimes it's based on what the customer says. Sometimes the customer says, anyone just think of an agent, read their mind and transfer to an agent. And some people say, you know, yeah, give this little nudge and make sure that we have a chance to resolve it. We haven't seen, and we actually don't take this use case where people are like, no, the bot will have to handle it 100% of the time. We don't want any agent to deal with that. That's the wrong customer for us. This leads itself to debt collectors, to telemarketers, to this type of customers that might abuse the technology. We tend not to take them. So we can focus on customers that actually add value to their callers and resolve their issues rather than, you know, try bug them and lock them in an unpleasant experience.
Google Duplex famously got into some ethical hot water when they introduced an autonomous agent that was designed, my words, not theirs, but designed to essentially mislead callers into thinking that they were booking a hair appointment or something with a live person, including introducing like ums and ahs and, you know, artificial speech that was designed to confuse callers. Obviously, I have a strong opinion about this. I talked a little bit about ethics in the opener. But how do you think about the ability of autonomous technologies to behave like humans and, you know, what the ethical implications are of encouraging or of designing technology that could potentially be used that way?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've been asked about it a lot. And you're right. Google, it was years ago, designed it as probably a product manager somewhere, thought it was a great idea to see how far we can stretch the technology. And I'm surprised that everybody in management that got all the way to show this demo did not think that this is cringy. Where most everybody listened to it said, oh my God, this makes me feel uncomfortable. And I don't think that they put enough effort and thinking and research into the implications of a bot pretending to be a human. On another kind of more humoristic note, John Oliver had a phenomenal episode on robocalls, and I had everybody at the company watch it. So they understand what we don't want to do, and there is, it's easy to fake it for a long time. Make sure you have an actor versus the still imperfect neural voices that are available in the market. Answer no if you're asked if you're a robot, and you can trick people for a little while. We made a very clear choice from the beginning. We're going to build everything we can to make it feel like it's a call with a human. Low latency between turns, high level of accuracy, being very contextual. But we will say at the beginning of the call, it's a thinking machine on a recorded line. And if we're asked if you're a robot, we said yes. We have like this generic answer in all a robot. Are you a robot? Yes, but I prefer to be called thinking machine. How may I help you? So we made this clear choice of not trying to sound like a human. If somebody wants a recorded voice, we do that. The recorded voice will still say it's a thinking machine. And we had a customer ask us not to do that and ask us to mislead their callers. And we fired this customer. We actually got out of this contract. And to put it in context, we had zero revenue when we've done that. And this customer was $1 million a year contract. And we said, no, we're not going to do that. This is unethical. And the customer said, no, but this is what I want. So just do it. And we said, no. And I went to the board and said, here's why we are not going to move from zero in revenue to million in revenue with this one customer. And the board said, you're right. This is long-term thinking and we support it.
Amazing integrity. I hope everyone listening plays that one back. It's a very, very impressive, Gotti.
But I want to actually make a more important point. I actually don't think that it's only because it's, you know, people hear it and say, oh, okay, this is righteous people and look like how lucky they are, and they end up raising a serious B. We're not as lucky. I think it's good business. I actually don't think of it as a higher moral grounds of some sort. I think most good moral choices are also good business. Once you start taking on these use cases, you get to customers that do unethical things. You expose yourself to lawsuits. You get involved in their lawsuits, even if they don't go after you directly. And it's just not good for the business. It's distracting. And you know what? If you have customers you're not proud to feature on your homepage, you cannot sell to more customers. So making this choice early on allow us to focus on brands we can be proud of partnering with, like AAA, like and like DoorDash, like many others, like great ethical companies that help us win other great ethical companies. And it's just great for our business. In addition, a good moral decision.
The other ethical gray area in this space is related to the collection and use of customer data for training models. Now, I'm going to toss this one out there. I assume that your models are trained on live conversations that are transcribed. As a consumer who's getting roadside assistance, for example, or booking a dentist appointment, who owns my data once I've shared it with a replicant thinking machine?
Yeah, that's a great question. The data, we actually use very little data to train our models. The models are so rich by now that they need very little training. And if you look at some of our intents, they will have 20 training sentences. Many of them are completely generic. We initially get to train intent by, so many of the intents are already trained. Like, we don't need to train the thinking machine to understand yeses and noes and all the ways people say them, or all the way people ask for us to be on hold. Anything around email collection, you know, there's a huge number of intents are not, they don't need to be trained. And then we work with someone, with a new customer. In many cases, we don't even ask to listen to call recordings. The language models are so good that we can literally ask agents to write 20 training sentences. And we get to 75-80% inference accuracy on this turns. And of course, then we use the data from the beginning of the conversation, from the first conversations, to improve inference accuracy until we get to about 95-97%, which is where usually improvement slows down and stops. Now, when you ask who owns the data, when the customers are calling in, we tell them every single time that they are on a recorded line. They know their calls are being recorded. And in a way, there's something about being able to easily retrieve the calls and transcript, but if there's any issue with the specific call, the customers also have a recourse. It's not that it's the majority of this data does not go anywhere. The majority of this data, it just stays there idle. Because again, we don't need more ways to train a yes or a no. At the end of the data is owned by the customer who records the call. And our customers agree in some cases to use their data to train generic models. In other cases, they just want to train their own models, and our system designed to do either.
So you store it and it's assigned to your customer, but do you also reserve the right to introspect it and potentially use it across customers?
Customers can choose whether their data will be used across for training purposes across bots. The default is no. The default is your data is only going to train your model. And again, we're lucky enough not to need customer data to train across models anymore, because all the generic models are also so well trained. But it is a choice. Most of our customers will choose to only use their data to train their own model. And I also noted that we are required, most customers require us to save the data and save the recording for other legal reasons, whether the customer make a complaint after a year or 2 years for compliance. So recording call data is something that every contact center does from the beginning of time. We've done it at Talk Desk. It's a feature available at any contact center, because compliance requires most companies to save this data for a period of time.
Every AI-first company at some point needs to confront the challenge of biased data leading to biased decision-making. And oftentimes it can seep into the, you know, kind of infrastructure of AI-first decisions in subtle ways. I could envision maybe with replicant thinking machines, a pattern associated with males versus females making requests, or potentially based on zip codes or geographies. And all of a sudden, you introduce bias in completely unintended ways. Everyone has the best intentions. What kind of protocols or how do you raise awareness internally of the potential for bias being, or kind of infiltrating some of what happens via the thinking machine?
Yeah, I'll start by saying that we are fortunate enough to not be in a decision-making position for most situations. If you call for a roadside assistance, our job is to understand what you say, and then use an algorithm that is in all cases maintained by the customer to make a decision. So, for example, if you call and say, I would like to get my car towed, and you're in a specific zip code, the only thing that will determine how fast you get a tow truck is the availability of tow trucks. It's, we just collect data, and the algorithm of AAA will say, so you have this car, which means you need a flatbed truck. My nearest flatbed is an hour away. Your wait time is going to be an hour. It's actually quite the opposite, because if you're impatient, if you scream at us, it wouldn't change anything. We're not going to put you on hold to punish you, as agents do, which sometimes they should, because these customers deserve it. We wouldn't, because we don't care if you scream at us or not. So most decisions, if not all decisions in our world, are actually made by an algorithm maintained by a customer, by the customer. If you want to add a vehicle to your insurance policy, we don't decide on what the price will be, because it's so far into the weeds of the business of our customer. All we need to know is that you have a vehicle, we walk you through adding it, and we use the same tools the agent have in order to determine what will be the increase in your policy based on a very strict algorithm, and in most cases, it has nothing to do with AI, that the company is maintaining. So our AI decision-making is limited to what you said and understand it correctly. That's actually a very simple way to distill it, but all we do is understand what you said and based on that decide what's the right next step. And it's reduced a lot of the bias in the conversation, because if you're angry or if you're a man or if you're a woman or if you're a minority, as long as we understand you correctly, then we're in a good spot. Now, we have seen issues with transcription, to be honest. That was the first issue we've seen once we started with the first use cases that were focused on restaurants. Because in restaurants, you get all the accents, all the minorities, from the high-end restaurant where someone was perfect English to the burrito place with someone that answered the phone and may have just immigrated 2-3 years ago. And we've seen that transcription models are not very good with different accents and different transactions. So in the early different accents and different levels of English skills, to be very clear on that. And in the beginning, what we focus on is how can we improve our data models to overcome that? So we'll get imperfect transcription, but our AI brain became more and more adept to understand this broken piece of information we got from, say, Google transcriptions and translate better to make a better decision. And then we start using this data to build our own transcription models that take into account accents and take into account imperfect English, which is another problem that people don't talk about a lot. It's all about accents, but the way you say things is very different based on your level of education, where you are in the country, and whether you're immigrant or not. So now we have our own transcription engine working in tandem with our NLP and the U brain to try to make this right determinations. And roughly half our calls are with people you will consider minorities, non-native speakers, less educated, because of the type of population we serve. So we're able to get, again, a pretty diverse set of voices to influence our transcription and our AI brain.
Good answer, got it. And I was hoping that that's where you'd go. You're primarily automating what we'll call deterministic workflows. So you're not having to make business decisions. You'll hand it off to, let's say, AAA to decide how quickly you can get a tow truck out to that location. But so back to an earlier question I was asking, what are the technological or cultural barriers standing in the way of making a consumer prefer a bot-first experience? So do you envision a time, even 5-10 years in the future, when the call center agent, the traditional role of the call center agent, that 5% of the time when the caller asks for a live agent handoff, when that goes away because the thinking machine will truly be able to make decisions where the workflow is not deterministic?
I envision over time, the role of the agent will change, but what we've seen in every industry. So, we're talking about AI as if it's the first time you automated anything. And we've been automating things for at least almost 200 years from the Industrial Revolution. And surprisingly, we just see more and more and more different type of jobs emerge. And I think the most recent example, if you look at the massive automation effort, is the ATMs. And I think it's a great example because banks used to be like call centers. You walk into a branch and there are many people that do the same exact job, which is either dispense cash to you or help you deposit checks. And when we introduced ATM and made them ubiquitous, what happened is that there were indeed fewer front-end agents, in this case, bankers and tellers, because for most people, you don't want to walk into a bank to just withdraw $400. You want to go out 24/7, get your cash. It's a significantly better customer experience, a significantly better teller experience. And now the people I used to call tellers move to do investment advice or help you with mortgage. And that's what's going to happen in the customer service space. Agents, the job of the agents are just going to transfer and change because companies are going to be more complex. And one of the ways to think about that is we are in what, year 25 of self-service. 25 years ago, if you want to buy anything or transact in anything, you either walk to a branch or you place a call. That's the only way. You want to buy a flight ticket, you want to deposit a check, you want to buy a pair of shoes, you have to walk somewhere or call someone and order through a catalog. They went to 25 years of self-service. If you want to buy a plane ticket, you can do it. You can book you can pick which seat you sit on. You can choose your meal. You can prepay for your luggage. You can do all the things automatically. But why do people still call? Because what airlines did with all the extra capacity we have is they make their business more complex. So there are no fewer people in airlines right now. The people are just reassigned differently. And a number of agents, number of call center calls are still stable, are still the same, because business just become more complex. And as you free up capacity, what businesses tend to do is reinvest it in different ways to increase their revenues and value to their shareholders. And that's what's going to happen in this customer service space as well. And the reason I know it is this has been happening the same exact way for the last 150 years. Every industry had been automated. So there's no reason for this to be different with customer service.
Gotti, we're out of time. Time flew by here, but I'm not letting you off the hot seat without answering one last question for me. So I haven't seen the John Oliver clip, but I'm going to find it and I'll link to it in the show notes. Tell me about the one thing in, let's say in your life as a consumer, where you're like, you know what, I really need a replica bot to help me out of doing this thing. What's the thing that needs to be automated?
Oh, it's a specific example. It will be hard to think of. I want Replicant to be everywhere because I call customer service. I've been in the space for 8 years. I call customer service all the time. And what I really wish, honestly, is that the agents on the other side are going to be the agents I believe you're going to have in 7 and 8 years. When you call United and I talk with agents all the time. So I'll answer this question differently because I want to focus for a second on the agents. When I call United, I've been a United customer forever and 100K or whatever the status is. The people who answer the phone are United employees. They get a free flight every year. They have all the benefits of a United employee. They earn good salaries and they love their job and they're really helpful. They can actually solve my problem when what I need is a pretty complex problem because I can solve all the simple ones myself. I'm a very experienced traveler. And I remember this summer I called Air France. Somebody answered in the Philippines. They clearly didn't know much about the complexity of travel. And I was like, I wish that Air France will automate the tier one calls in a way that allow me to speak with somebody really experienced because I don't call for the simple stuff. So I think it's true almost everywhere when I call and want to get service. I want to call my garbage company and ask for a special collection that's waiting on hold, not knowing how long it will take. There's no easy form to do it online. So it's almost everywhere in life. I would prefer that for the simple stuff, there will be a replicant solution. Can't think of a specific one though.
Great example though. More replicant to free up the live agents to be better trained, better paid, handle the things that are non-standard. Hey, Gotti, this has been great. As we enter that future that you described, smarter bots that are ubiquitous, I hope you'll come back and we'll have another conversation like this.
I would love to.
Hey, Gotti, before you take off, where can the listeners learn more about you and the company?
They can go to our website by going to replicant.ai, actually replicant.com too. You know, follow us on LinkedIn and reach out. I'm happy to chat with anyone that have questions about the topic.
Well, I love this conversation. I can say we are all rooting for you and the team to be successful. So much success ahead.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
You bet. This is Dan Turchin, your host of AI and the Future of Work. That's a wrap for this week, but we're back next week with another fascinating guest.